things like Confucius and some of those Eastern philosophers and stuff like that love so much that it's been passed down to their world. They talk about and then some of the history we have is because
All right. Welcome to another episode of the Joe and Doug Show. How's Joe today?
Good. How about you?
I'm doing great.
Can't complain. Like these uneventful weeks. These are kind of nice.
Yeah.
We packed a lot of shit in the last week.
So. Now, TEDx was awesome.
It was.
And what was did you have a favorite speaker or favorite?
There was one dude who I think that got some viral potential. He's a physicist and he was working on, some of the big ailments like Alzheimer's and whatever, but using laser technology and nanoparticles. So that was a really interesting one.
That's cool. Well, we haven't had a guest on in a while, and I was hanging out with Marcus McFoling today, and Marcus is awesome. He's been on Jed's show a while back sharing his story. He's been on my other podcast sharing his story, and so I thought we should have him on today. And he does Reach One, and they do a whole bunch of different things, and we'll get into all of that. So Marcus, welcome to the Joe and Doug Show.
It's good to be here, man. Appreciate the opportunity to, speak with two amazing men. So looking forward to it.
Well, Joe, Joe's on the entrepreneurial end of things. And I know that vein runs deep in you.
Yeah.
You've never met a business or opportunity that you've said no to.
Listen, anytime I come into a relationship with somebody, if a business connection wasn't made, then I wasted my time. So absolutely.
So Marcus does photography. He does speaking in schools. He travels and preaches. He's got what else does Reach One do?
Oh, we've got Reach One Leadership. Birth and Reach One Cuisine, because I love to cook. That's
some
just
steak,
my,
bro.
That's my love language. So.
That's good. Well, why don't we do this? Why don't you kind of introduce, just give your 3-minute background type deal and what Reach One is, and then we'll dive into some of the entrepreneurial.
Absolutely. Stuff. So my background from Seaside, California. Grew up in an inner city, just had a lot of negative cards that were dealt to me, but I was able to kind of overcome not having a father in my life, not graduating from high school, got a chance to get a scholarship to play football in Ohio. That's what brought me to Cold Ohio is what I call it during these times. And I did well there, got a chance to go to the NFL Combine, was successful. And, I didn't get drafted, but I played 4 years in the Arena Football League. Unfortunately, had a career-ending injury working out for the Cowboys and led me down a cycle of drug addiction, overcame addiction, went to this place called Teen Challenge, and boy, I got set on fire for the Lord. In that program, the Lord spoke to me about Reach One, and Reach One stands for Reconciling Every Abandoned Child Home. It's an outreach youth movement with a goal of inspiring a generation of world changers to live a life of purpose, power, and destiny.
Come on.
Graduated the program, and God opened the door for Reach One to be birthed. And I've been doing
now. You graduated the program, but yeah. I've heard you say this before. It's the only thing you've ever graduated.
Only thing I've ever graduated from today. I'm working on college.
Yo, come on.
But yeah, so I ended up graduating and got a chance to just communicate to 2,000 young people in Ashland.
Wow.
And that was the start of Reach One. 2019, spoke to 120,000 people. 2020, we were looking to double that, but COVID year kind of put a hamper in a lot of our plans. And so what I did was, I didn't find my identity in speaking. I just pivoted. I said, okay, God, what are you calling me to do now? And so someone bought me a camera. And I was like, all right, well, hey, we're gonna make it happen. So I started to take pictures. And next thing you know,
you self-taught yourself watching YouTube
University. Come on, YouTube University.
And he takes great pictures.
I just wanted to create a space for people to feel valued and loved. And you can do that through videography or photography. And, ended up investing about 40 grand in equipment. And I actually came to the first time I came to the studio, I was just getting started. And now we've got a lot of gear. I've got all the Shure SM7B mics, and we just have this studio, and this photography business is pretty successful. It's pretty sustainable. So, and got back to speaking at the end of 2021, and things are getting ready to rock.
And when you say speaking, it's not just churches. Yeah. You go into schools. That's predominantly kind of your focus. And what do you do when you go into the public schools?
So the way that I say it is I preach the gospel and use words when necessary. It's almost like smuggling Bibles into China. So you can't preach Jesus, right? But I get to love people where they're at and create the space for them to have these moments of impact, where when you create a moment of impact, a young person realizing who they are when they're 13 years old, I hope they never have to walk down the path that I walk through. So our dynamic assembly presentation, I can say this with confidence, it'll be one of the best assembly presentations your school has ever seen, not because of me, but because of what God is doing through me. And we just have seen some crazy stuff happen in schools, like buck wild. Like we're talking about kids giving their life to Christ, and I never did an altar call type stuff. Principals setting me up to go and pray with students in their offices, just crazy stuff. And it's been a fun journey.
That's cool. Now I know Joe's done some work in the schools, and I know one of his passions is teaching. He actually designed a whole maker space in Struthers so that people can come learn how to 3D print and do t-shirt stuff and a bunch of different things. And I know it hit one of his big passions is that next generation passing that on. So why don't you talk about some of the stuff you've done in the schools and what that's look like for you?
Yeah. And we don't have a lack of access to information. And that's what's beautiful is that if like you want to become a photographer, you're 30 seconds from watching your first video towards it. Right.
Absolutely.
And I think the next generation kind of takes it for granted a little bit because you have such ease of access until a person like Marcus comes in and like wins you over with his charisma and his personality. Like you didn't even know you need to know what he knew until you met him.
Yeah.
So I think that a lot of like in-person, non-virtual, non-audio book, that kind of learning is what people are craving the most. So, you know, our makerspace is not knowing something is where we're most intimidated. Like we get so much insecurity when we want to think that other people might think we're stupid for not knowing something. And so that's what I want to give to, we started out with the 50 plus generation that hated computers whatsoever. And they didn't want anything to do with it. Right.
Yeah.
And so it was the worst market to go in to try to sell technology to. And we did it. Like it was amazing. And to this day, people who would otherwise never touch this crap did it because we were held their hand, made them feel safe and didn't make them feel stupid. It was just a big part.
Yeah. And so I know I've come in here and seen your 3D printer setting up printing Nikola Tesla's head or whatever. And how has that gone? I know you've had some experimental nights and stuff with it. I know your wife's now got a store down there as well. How does that go? And how do you get people to come through the door that are maybe more intimidated, especially young people?
So the way that I've been doing things is we're sort of like connecting on the back end. We're going to interface with the public eventually, sure, but more like working with schools and churches and community leaders and municipalities and getting allies assembled first that kind of believe in the fact that, you know, you can take people that weren't doing it yesterday, bring them into a fold, teach them how to do something, and then, you know, they can go do their own thing. So
yeah,
that's cool. Been the biggest part of it is because when you have to do marketing where they don't even know that they need the product, it's a lot more, you know.
Yeah.
Around, so.
Do you find that to be true for you, Marcus? You need those allies. Do you find, Reach One has assembled some allies that have opened some doors for you?
Yeah, I think. Well, it's funny because I don't think you understand the impact that you had on me when I came to the studio, where I had just bought. I can't remember my first microphone. I don't know if you remember. I was like, what kind of soundboard do I need? Yeah. Okay, you need that. So I have that soundboard now. You said you need some Shure SM7B microphones. You need to get cloud lifters. You need to get some camera set up, and so. That
you were walking around taking pictures,
honestly. Yeah, like it served as like the grounds for me to be able to build upon what was inside of my heart. And you're so right, people are afraid of what they don't understand. And I didn't understand anything about this, but one of the things that I pride myself in is if I don't know, I'm going to ask. And so, building allies in this space, in the creative space, it's so important to not act like you have it all together. Like, I honor you and what you've built. I walked in and said, I need a studio like this. So, hopefully, in a year, maybe not quite like this, but it'll be something close to this. And valuing the hard work that someone else has put in and building that relationship is super important. And so,
and can I tell you something, Doug? Like the first time I met him, he gave me a stack of his business cards about this tall, right? Mm-hmm. And I keep them on the top left of my desk. And I look at those all the time because this guy didn't know me for anything, but he networked with me. And I thought, I want to be that one day where I can walk in and sling a stack at someone like that and be brave that way. So Marcus, you had an impact.
Absolutely. And one of the things I just value people. Like I prayed a prayer. I said, God, I want to have a love for humanity. And I've learned to love people from all different shapes, sizes, walks, and value. Like I don't want to build relationships with people just so that they believe like me. I want to build relationships with people because I value what's inside of them. And like they say, a wise man learns from his own mistakes. A wiser man learns from the mistakes of others. And so I'm looking at the fruit of your life and I'm like, okay, hey, I want to be in connection with this guy. I want to know something that he knows so that I can get to where I believe God is calling me to go, especially in the creative space. And so far, so good, man.
Yeah. Where'd you get all this courage from, though? Because you're fearless when it comes to this stuff.
Man, honestly, whenever you go and battle drug addiction the way that I did, my whole life was exposed. I was in front of everybody. They saw every nook and cranny of my life. And then it freed me, realizing that, hey, transparency does lead to transformation. And so when I was buck naked, I learned to be unashamed. I said, you know what? Hey, you're going to see my flaws, but I'm going to go for it, because more than anything, I want to be found faithful with every gift that God has given me. If he's given me an ability to create, I want to be creative. Like I had no idea, coming from the inner city, photography, videography, speaking, that was not, it's not on anybody's radar. And I got the space to be able to communicate. And I was like, you know what? I'm not afraid to put myself out there. And honestly, my wife really encouraged me when I got home. I was terrified to tell my story. People think that's crazy now, but I was like a little puppy walking next to her. I said, hey, okay, I'm just going to stay with you the whole time. But she says, no, go and build friends. God has called you to this. Once you get the green light from your wife, oh, it was a wrap. And putting yourself out there, one of the things is this, making sure your heart is pure. Like, I don't build relationships with people from a transactional standpoint. Like, I want to be in relationship with somebody because I value what's on their life, not because I want to get something from you. I value what you've built. So I'm going to ask you those questions and then I'm going to apply it, because if I don't apply the wisdom that you guys give me, then I'm a fool. Right. I'm a fool.
Now, what about in the face of opposition, where you got cynics that are taking chunks at you? Oh, you're staying courageous anyhow.
Well, I tell you what, listen, you know, this past year is probably the first time I started to receive, not hate mail, but I dislike you mail. And, you know, when it's from somebody that you don't know, at first it kind of rocked me. I'm like, yo, you don't even know me. Like they would comment on like these YouTube videos saying some crazy stuff.
Yeah,
like,
yeah. We've had some good ones on Reddit. And so we've been cussed out, all sorts of stuff.
Yeah. I'm like, man, so like they don't know my heart. Okay. People are going to say stuff. But what hurt me the most was when it was people that knew me and people that had saw the transformation. And when one of my best friends was dogging me to my face, that was the hardest thing. And I had to ask myself, the first thing I always ask myself is, Marcus, is any of this true? Is any of it true? Because why is it affecting you the way it's why it's affecting you? And then when I filter through that and I let the Lord speak life in that, then I have to say, okay, I get to suffer for his name's sake. And honestly, let's just be real. In our Western context, I'm not suffering anything.
Yeah.
At most, I'm not facing persecution. I'm facing ridicule. And I realized that, hey, I will take the blows in order to create a space or a path for somebody else. And so that's kind of what we've been doing.
That's a huge challenge when you've set yourself, or not set yourself, when the Lord set you in a place, or you position yourself as a CEO or as a leader of a nonprofit or as a pastor, you're in that public eye. And a lot of times everything you say and everything you do is looked at through a microscope. And I heard a mentor say early on for me, if you live for the applause of men, you'll die by their criticism. Absolutely. And I found that to be very true early on in ministry. Monday mornings were horrible for me. if attendance was good on Sunday and offering was up, I was like, I'm the best pastor ever. And then if it was down in the dumps, if it snowed or whatever, I was like, I'm gonna fail. The whole church is gonna be short. And I would go on this roller coaster every Monday until I finally was like, I'm done buying tickets to that ride. Like, I'm not going to be successful because everybody applauded me and it went well on Sunday. And I'm not going to be a failure because we had a down week. Absolutely. And when you get on and off that ride so often, it wears on you. And we live in a culture right now where everything is transparent out in the open. I think of Jesus's first day ministry, Joe. It reminds me of a scripture.
Thank you.
Sorry, that's our scripture button. in Luke's gospel in chapter 4 at the end, Jesus had gone to two places. And the first place he went, he had a ton of success. The first place he went, the next place he struggled. And what was interesting is the place where he had success, people were like, oh, please don't go, stay with us. And Jesus's response was like, but I'm here to preach to others. Like, I understood my purpose, and my purpose is what allows me not to get hung up on success or failure. It allows me to push past. All right, I've had some success. Great. But that's not why I'm here. I'm not here to be successful. I'm here to fulfill a purpose. And there's a difference in that. And I think I know as a 20 something, I really wrestle with that, because you want to be successful.
For sure.
And, you know, I heard a mentor say, you know, success is what you're after in your 20s and 30s. And then you realize what you really wanted was significance. And then you get some significance, and realistically what you want is legacy, and you want to pass that down. You know, as you've progressed into this, obviously you've had critics and stuff like that. You've connected with some schools, you've had some, you know, just powerful stuff like that. When you sit down, you're looking for an ally or a partnership, or to, you know, connect with somebody like Joe, or a business owner, you walk into a photographer. What are the things you're thinking of? What are the questions you're asking? What are you looking for? Obviously you're saying, I don't just want to have a transactional relationship, but there are some people Jesus said it this way. He says, you know, foxes have dens, mm-hmm. birds have nests, but the Son of Man has nowhere to lay his head. There's some people I can't reproduce with.
For sure.
Like, there's some people, they just don't have those things. And so what are you looking for in allies?
Yeah. The biggest thing I look for is just a kingdom mentality, is being able to think not so much in their current context, because unfortunately in the space that I'm in, certain people think very close-minded. It's about their niche or the people that they run with or their denomination. What I look for is people that are kingdom. And when I say kingdom, I mean, you can think outside the box. Like last night I was speaking with a room full of agnostics. Like they were like, they were, and can I not create a space to have a conversation with somebody about what I believe and what they believe? And can we not love each other despite it? Do I have to always have a conversation to convert you? And so I look for people that create that space to have those conversations. And I look for people that think outside the box. And I want to be able to add value to somebody else's life as well.
Yep.
Like sons are looking to fathers and fathers are looking to sons. Sons pull on the fathers and fathers pour into the sons. And I heard this quote. I was at a leadership retreat a few weeks ago. And it really stuck with me. It was from John Tyson. He said, older people want legacy, younger people want destiny.
Yeah, that's good.
And so to be able to help fulfill destinies and fulfill legacies, like that's what I'm after. Like I want to submit myself, because what happens as a millennial, like we want it fast. We want it now. We want to serve a microwave.
We want it yesterday.
God,
boy. Yeah.
But understanding that God is more of a crockpot God, how can I position myself to be submitted under leadership, to have voices in my life? You're one of the voices in my life that can call me out on my mess. Mm-hmm. Like, yeah, ministry and speaking and all that stuff. But hey, how's your marriage? Hey, are you watching pornography? Like asking me the hard questions, because then that's how you really build that relationship. And especially when it's kingdom. Oh man, I've got big dreams, especially for this area. Like it's probably what we're going to talk about later today. And so just to be able to have those kingdom people to run with, for sure.
It's good. It's good. Joe, when you're looking for an ally, obviously, Marcus and I both tackle this from a very Christian spiritual perspective. So we're using some lingo like kingdom and elsewhere. Take it into a business vernacular for us, because some of our listeners are not spiritual in any way. So what would be your way of looking at allies, and how are you developing partnerships? I know you partner with some people that don't vote like you, don't believe like you, don't look like you, but you find those avenue. So what are you looking for in those partnerships? Put your kind of lingo on it.
So what Marcus said about pouring into someone, if you can add value to another person, whether it's their business or person, that's where you're pretty much supposed to be. So when I run across someone that I might be interested in working with, but I can't see how I can add something I can only take, I stay away from that one because I can't reciprocate. And that's that turns into those transactional where somebody feels like they can get, you know, they get a little bit shorter.
I've heard you say that. We've talked about business opportunities here, and you've said, well, I had this person come in and I could see where we can make money, but I'm just not sure I can add any value to their business. So yeah, I can sign on and give you 10% or 20% and make my money, but it's transactional at that point. I don't want to be a part of that. And I've seen you walk away from those.
Yeah. And a couple of them, like a lot of people want help, but they don't know what they need. So they're willing to give up something they don't understand to get something they need. And those are the trickier ones because it's a little bit more abstract.
Mm.
But regular relationship, I walk into a room and I have a pleasant exchange, like nothing really happened until I can figure out what I can do of service. You know, so I'm the whole time I'm wondering, like, what do I need to do? Like, what's my purpose here?
Yeah. And
if I can find one, cool. If not, you know, move right on.
Well, we've said that about our relationship. There are times where we'll be sitting here, even on the podcast or in the back room, they're just, you know, cutting it up or at your house or whatever. And we can't figure out who's giving or who's receiving. Like
it's a perfect relationship.
Exactly.
As far as I'm concerned.
Yeah. Love it. Love it. You know, when you think about next generation, cause that's kind of Marcus's lane, is his big calling, is the reach one is about children, about kids coming home. When you think about the next generation, Joe, what are the things that you're like, they need this so desperately? I know what Marcus is going to say, but I want to hear you first, and then you guys can play off each other.
So it's almost like a generation that traditional anything doesn't work with, right? And so like whatever worked from before to now, you got to reinvent it in a way that's more tricky than it is, right in your face. So I think the next generation is going to have to be given some of these ideals, but under the guise of practicality, how do I use this? How do I, because I don't think the idealistic portion of them is as much as previous generations. Mm.
So you're saying like where our parents' generation or grandparents' generation, they did that because that's what you do. And you listen to authority.
Through the traditions.
This generation is like, well, I don't care what the authority
did. I don't know what to do with that.
Yeah. So. It's got to be authentic. It's got to be packaged in a way. And what would be one of those ideals that you would say have to be packaged for them?
Well, there's an ethical moral rule book that we follow. And then there's a what benefits me and what I'm, what benefits are coming towards me. And so if you could say like, don't steal, but in a pinch when I need to, I'm going to go steal versus a rule book where like, you know, this is uncomfortable, but I'm still not going to steal because that's a principle. That's where we're at now. The principles are malleable, and that's a rough place to
interesting
be.
Sure. You know, when I watched the movie Kingdom of Heaven, it's years old. It's about the Crusades, and I forget all who's in it. It's like Liam Neeson and whatever, but they have this. They initiate a new knight into the knights that are protecting Jerusalem. And one of the phrases they say during the initiation is, you know, speak the truth, even if it leads to your death. And this idea that there are these uncompromising principles. And that's something that I've heard so much in our culture and the media is, you know, this generation doesn't have any, their uncompromising principle is that they uncompromise on everything.
Right. There's an asterisk.
Yeah, exactly. Next to that one, but everything else is up for game. That. So the only value is pluralism. Everything else is up for debate. And so, you're in the schools, you're seeing the kids, obviously, you know, I don't want to take away from, there's probably 10 or 12 personal stories you could tell, real life examples of this. But what do you see this next generation craving more than anything else?
So I feel like I know a few things that they need. And sometimes a need, we may not want something, but we need it. Like I needed rehab. I didn't want it, but I needed it because it would produce something in me that would, you know, lead to me being a husband and a father to my children. What the next generation needs is they need fathered. Like they need it. They need it more than they realize. And what's happening is we're growing up in an anti-Christian society, like against Christ. And so the next generation, there's the rise of progressive Christianity. They believe that they're God. They're their own gods. They are in control of their own destiny. And what they need more than anything is for us to create a space around a common language, right? So the next generation, baby boomers, millennials, Gen Z, and now the alpha generation.
Alpha, like, yeah.
My daughters are growing up in that generation. What I'm seeing is we need to create a common space where every voice is welcome. Every single voice, every single generation is valued. And for me, I personally believe this has been my last 2-week process, is I want to create a space where people can come together around a meal because everybody loves to eat. And everybody loves to eat my cooking if you had it. And so if I can create a space where we start to talk and have dialogue saying, okay, hey, the older generation, they just want us to submit. The younger generation just wants to be heard. How can we create a space where the next generation is heard, but they're also submissive, and where the older generation can be able to pour in, but they're not being domineering or controlling? And the best way to do that, I feel, is around a meal. Let's have a meal together and bring everybody's voice is valued, because the next generation, they feel unheard. That's why they're screaming, listen to me, listen to me, listen to me. If you're not going to listen, I'm going to create my own platform. Like I've got friends right now, like they have access to millions of people through social media, millions of people, and they're Gen Z on fire for the Lord, but they need father. And so really more than anything, what the next generation needs is fathers that'll listen. Fathers that'll value what's inside of them, and fathers that'll create space, because as any father, our revelation has to be the foundation for the next generation. Mm-hmm. Like if I don't do my job in my daughter's life and they're having to learn things over because I didn't create the space for them or the platform for them, then that's my fault as a father. And so I just take on that responsibility for sure.
So I'm going to blow you away with this, but you are not the first person to think that people need to get around a table. As a matter of fact, in Genesis chapter 1, the first spot that God calls holy is this period called the Sabbath or the Shabbat dinner. And every Friday night, Marcus is coming to Israel in May with Eagles Wings. And I have the privilege of getting to help lead that trip with Bishop Stearns. It's going to be fantastic. When we go to Shabbat dinner on Friday night in the old city of Jerusalem at a Jewish house, you're going to see exactly what you're just talking about. Wow. And they've been doing it for 5,000 years.
Oh my gosh.
Every Friday night.
I can't wait, man. I cannot
wait. It's one of my favorite parts. Like, everybody goes to Israel for, oh, I want to stand where Jesus stood. Mm-hmm. I want that stuff's cool. Mm-hmm. But man, when you go into the home and you see something that was written on the pages of scripture thousands of years ago, and then you get to participate in this meal where old, young, everybody sits around the table. Wow. The father pronounces blessing over the children, sings to his wife. Right. That, bro. You're going to be a fountain.
I can't wait. It's beautiful.
It's beautiful. But I love that. And I agree with that sentiment. And I think the further we get from the dinner table as a culture, the more problems we're going to encounter. I mean, you see that statistically, fatherless homes lead to so many terrible things. And if we would just understand that God knew what he was doing when he set this thing up, you know, moms and dads in a home raising a family. I know everybody's against a nuclear family. It's got to be this, got to be that. I'm telling you what. Psychology bears it out. Statistics bear it out. Like, that is the healthiest spot for kids, for the next generation, and for moms and dads. Like, there are things I have to lay down, and as a husband, I'm like, Lord, I do not want to do that right now. But I'm in a committed relationship where we're partners in this, and so sometimes I gotta lay some things down that I don't want to lay down. I want to be in charge. But
for sure, like, even before I came here today, my daughter looked at me and she said, "Daddy, I want you to play with me." And I'm like, "Honey, Daddy, I just came from one meet." I said, "Daddy's got to go." She had this tea set I just bought her yesterday. She's like, "Daddy, will you have tea with me?" And I had a choice. Either I can just leave and say, "Honey, I got to go," or I can sit down, push my plans a little bit, and spend time with my daughter.
Right, come on.
And so I stopped. I sat down with her. We had tea. We had fun. They ran around. They screamed. They had a good time. And what they're going to remember is, "Daddy always made time for me," because fathers make time for their children. More than anything that I can do productivity-wise, like, and I always tell myself this, if my daughter ever were to ask me, I don't care what stage it is, like, I'm speaking on some big stages this year. If Avery ever came to me and says, "Daddy, I don't want you to go." I'm like, I'm gonna ask her why. It better be legit. But I'm not going to go, because I want to value my daughter more than the opportunity for me to even preach the gospel. Like, ministry can easily become a mistress. It can. And I'm telling you, COVID for me was the divine reset. It's like, yo, hey, this is the direction you were heading without even knowing it. Make sure that you're the father of your home, because fathers tell their children who they are. Scientifically speaking, the male determines the sex of a child. I believe there's a significance in our voice, and we can tell our kids who they're going to become. We can speak life to them. And if you don't have kids, the next generation needs fathered. Like, they are hungry. Even somebody that may be listening to this right now,
big, you may brother, have some, big sister programs, all of that. There's lots.
You may
out
have
there.
Some young people in your life that are gleaning and looking at what you're doing. Use your voice to speak life and tell them who they are, not who they're not. Because if we let the world tell them who they are, we'll continue to see what we're seeing.
Yeah,
a bunch of carnage and
crazy. You know, you talk about time, and I know Joe is really big in how he spends his time. He's up very early. He's very diligent with his vision board and measuring stuff out. I just did a teaching a week or two ago, and I talked about 85% of the tasks that you're doing, the stuff that you do in a day, somebody else could do for you. 10% of your time should be spent training people to do the really important stuff out of that 85% that you don't want to release. But only 5% of what you do, only you can do. Only I can be a husband to Sam. Only I can be a father to my children. Only I, like, there's some tasks and some roles that only that are my responsibility. I can't pay somebody to step in and do that. I pay somebody to clean my house, pay somebody to cut the grass, but I can't pay somebody to show up at my son's little league game. I can't pay somebody to have tea with my daughter. Like, those are things that only I can do. And when I'm winning, I'm living in the 5%, and that's where I'm investing more of my time than anything else. So, how do you? I know Joe has a priority set, and obviously, you've made some tremendous investments in Ryan. Your son's a really good kid, and bright and articulate, and does great with that stuff. How have you been intentional with that since Marcus brought up the most important relationship, obviously with our spouse, but then our kids, and how we're making that investment?
So before I answer that, I was thinking of a business idea when you're like, I can start a company that can go to these baseball games for parents. That seems like a premium service, right? Oh,
Do you suck at parenting? Boy, hey, I got
a cardboard cutout.
Oh, I could hear the sales pitch. That would be a great Super Bowl commercial.
What's crazy is people would invest in it.
They would. Yeah, for sure. But I mean, I tell you, I don't do shame and guilt. Like,
no.
It's not something I harbor. But the one thing, if I feel guilty, is that, you know, I have a home office, right? Yeah. And so I like to get some work done at home so I don't have to break away and be away from my family for long periods of time. But that means if I'm dug in and I'm working on a project, then Ryan comes in here, right, in the office, and like, hey, what'd you do? Like, I'm focused. And so if I have any regrets, it's in those moments I behave badly in that. And I say, you know, give me some couple minutes and hours slide by kind of a thing. So
we've all been there.
If I had the principle of Marcus that I could break away and do that, know that there's, you know, there's some big value in that. Now, thankfully, like, it's probably one of my stronger suits where I do, when I do have time, I So he forgives me for not being great when I'm busy.
No. Yeah. And one of the simple things, you know, if you're listening today and you're like, man, I don't know, you know, I'm so busy, I got multiple things. Joe doesn't just run Youngstown Computers and Youngstown Studio. You got your hands in a dozen,
five, six companies.
Yeah. A bunch of different companies. And, realistically, I heard, I think it was Mark Batterson said this, that anytime his wife calls him, he just takes the call. He doesn't care if he's sitting with the president of the United States or whoever. He's like, I'm going to take the call because she's the most important person in the world. And I've done that, I want to say, like 95% of the time. Because if I say I've done it every time, I will be like, I read that one time and I ignored the call or whatever. Or I was in a meeting and I didn't. But I really try and be diligent with that. And it gets funny sometimes because my wife will call about absolutely nothing. And I'll be like, hey, I'm in the middle of a meeting. You know, I'm in like a counseling session. And I'll be like, did you need something? Oh, no, it can wait. Okay. Like, you have access to my calendar. Yeah. Please look before you call and tell me that you want me to pick up gummy bears. Like, you know, but there are those times where I have picked up and, hey, I need you. And I'm able to drop everything and go to that space. And and I think that determines where you spend your time, where you spend your money, determines your priorities and your outcome in life. So, how does Joe evaluate his time? I know you have your vision board. I know you're up early and we've done a few of these before, but how are you, you know, making investments, passing things on in terms of, you know, I know you're working with business owners, a few of them at the church, and they've just enjoyed that relationship. I talked with Bandy and she sold a painting on Sunday. I got to see it because it's going to hang up in the church office. D was one of her first customers, and which is really cool. And she was all excited and, it's fantastic. And I love that you're pouring that side into to folks at the church. But how do you decide how much time you give to something? And when do you say, you know what, you're going to have to figure that out on your own? Because we do that with our own kids. Like, at some level, Abraham wants me to do everything for him right now. I'm like, dude, put your own shoes on. Yeah, but daddy, I don't know how. Yes, you do. I've watched you do it 100 times. But then, he'll just want that or zip up my coat or whatever. And at some point, if I keep doing it for him, I'm going to handicap him for the future. So when you're making those investments, at what point do you switch over?
Oh, boy. All right. So I got to explain this. And Marcus, I got to give you that you didn't hear this program early on in this podcast. I used to use a system called Manchu. Okay. So it was basically you take every person, opportunity, and place, and you assign it a numerical value. And on a regular basis, you say, Doug, where's Doug at? How do I rank him? Where's he at? What we'd have to do next, and have this long list of things that I have to do to invest in Doug. And before I got all of this started, it became very transactional, very rigid, very, you know, if someone came down the road, I was seeing like the opportunity they pose in me, and I was more likely to talk to people that had a higher value and less likely to talk to those people who had a lesser value. I mean, it worked mathematically. I mean, the formulas were great and it was right on target, but it made me really value people in a bad way, and not a great way. So then Doug and I discussed this, and I laid it out on the table, and I made a hybrid of this Manchu list. And in my back office, I take these, you know, big sticky notes and put it on the wall. And I take all the opportunities, I put it in the middle, and I give every person that's in my sphere a different colored sticky note. And I arrange them depending on how close they are to helping me or assisting me or being an ally towards one of these goals. And the further they move away from those goals, then I have to evaluate where they should go in. Maybe I need to talk, maybe I need to sit down, maybe I need to reconnect. And the closer they are, the more that I just put energy and effort behind them to get them even closer. But I'm a visual learner that way. So it lets me arrange people in my world depending on, you know, where they're at. I don't know if that answers your question.
Yeah, I think that, you know, the way that you kind of hybrid on some of that stuff and you figure out, but, you know, a lot of times we give our time to those who take it from us, not necessarily where the best value is. And there's certainly the interruptible moments. There's certainly times where we should do that. But to be good stewards of our time, we also, I want to plant in good soil. I don't just want to chuck seed on, you know, the concrete over there. Like, I want to make sure the soil is receptive. And so I don't think there's anything wrong in evaluating, like, hey, you know what? I do this with counseling. Like, I tell people, like, you have three appointments. First one, you can tell me your problem. I'll pray with you. Second one, I'm going to come in and say, all right, this is what the Bible says. This is what I feel like you need to do. I want you to go and execute on that. When you've executed on that, come back. 9 times out of 10, there isn't a third appointment because they just wanted to share their problem. Yeah. They wanted agreement. They didn't want a solution. But in that space for me, I'm going, I don't have time. Like, pay somebody $150 an hour to talk about, you know, why in first grade your teacher didn't like you. Yeah. I don't have time for that. It's not because I don't love you, but I know where my time is most valued. So I'm going to position myself in such a way to pour into people. You know, there's the, where Jesus calls the disciples, he says, come follow me and I will make you. There's the, there's the aspect where there has to be a following on some people's part, in order for them to be made. So how do you handle that?
So I have this principle that I call the 12 that I live by. I mean, it's what Jesus did. Jesus gave access to himself to 12 men, and within the 12, he had three. And so automatically, straight up default, my wife and my two girls are in my top three.
Yeah.
No ifs, ands, or buts about it. And in my phone, I actually have my phone on do not disturb, because in one of the schools I went to, I had my business cards, and my cell phone number used to be on my business card. So, you know, middle school, they will literally call you all the time. So I had to put my phone on do not disturb, but I have a favorites list, and I have, there's three people in my life that have access to me all the time. My wife can call me, doesn't matter the meeting, my spiritual father and one of my spiritual sons, no matter what, those three people have access to me like all the time. And it's knowing where people are at, because there's 12 and then there's the 72 and then there's the 500.
Yep.
And so I have people, and just putting people in their proper place, because if someone's in my 12 and they need access to me, I'm going to give them access. But I was on the way here and actually was talking to a young lady, because her boyfriend really wants me to mentor him. And I says, I will not reach out to him. If he's hungry for this, come and get it. Yep. I am completely open, but you've got to do the hard work and reach out and like put yourself out there, because I'm not going to chase anybody. We've all been in those situations where we've chased people and, hey man, I see so much value in you, but if you don't see it in yourself,
not
really. I'm not wasting my time, because I used to be meeting man of the year. I was in so many meetings listening to people tell me the same thing over over and over. And I love people, but I had to realize that, man, my most valuable asset is time, and I cannot spend my time just hearing the same thing over and over. So I just look at my 12, and you know, that's kind of how I govern my time.
Yeah.
I set meetings at 4 o'clock in the morning. So there's got to be super serious.
And people think I'm crazy. I say, I have meetings at 6 a.m. I say, meet me at Starbucks at 6 a.m. if you're hungry for it. And we'll see if they show up.
That's
and if they keep showing up, then cool.
Means something.
Exactly. Yep. If not, like, oh, I can't wake up there. Okay. Well, then you're not hungry for this.
That's it.
So that's anybody that I've met, any mentors, like, I'll never forget Bill Granning runs a live festival. I would reach out to him like crazy, like blew him up. I'm like, hey, Bill, that I just want to meet. I will pay them $100 to take them to lunch. Like, hey, let me just, I just want to ask you some questions. I value what's on your life. And I wanted to do what they told me. And so I applied it, and Bill was like, all right, meet me at 6:30. I was there before him. I make it a point to be there before them. Like, I'm there before him. Wait, hey, what's up, Bill? I'm a morning person anyway. So, and that stood out to him. It ended up giving me an opportunity to supervise setup at a live, which means I was just over, you know, watching the guys build the stages from Teen Challenge. Mm-hmm. Then the following year, COVID happens. But the next year, they asked me to speak. I was like, well, I was just faithful to a relationship. And when you're faithful to a relationship, opportunities come. And this year, they booked me again to speak, which is crazy, because I didn't get in relationship with Bill to speak at a live.
Right.
I just valued what was on his life. And I knew that he was successful, and he would help me become successful if I applied the wisdom. So
that's so good. Yeah. I do a teaching called Spatial Relationships. I believe all relationships are about space. And I use an illustration of a house. Anybody can come up and ring the doorbell on my house, and it's up to me whether or not they get to come in. And so too many people give access to too many people to the inside of their home. And then I go through each of the spaces in the house. There's a living room, and there's a kitchen and a dining room. I don't break bread with everybody that comes into my house. Some people only get to see, you know, in the living room, you get to know a little bit about me, see some family pictures, that sort of stuff. You get the wrong person in the wrong space, and it'll jack up your world. There's only a couple, there's only one person that needs access to the bedroom. There's only a couple people that get to go upstairs.
Yeah.
Like upstairs is off limits in our house, just not because, you know, we're mean or any of that stuff, but like, hey, there's an access point. You have to have a level of relationship to move in here.
Absolutely.
And I often tell people, you know, you need to move people slowly along in that, because it's easier to give them access than it is to take away access. So if you let people in too quickly, it's tough to be like, well, you're no longer allowed in this space. I'm like, what do you mean? I've been in here 20 times. I've eaten dinner at your house, and yeah, but you've become too familiar, or this isn't working, or whatever. And I love that. For me, I'm a visual in that sense. And so it helps me to kind of picture like, all right, these are my living room people. These are my kitchen people. Yeah. These are the people I'm going to invite in my study for my collaborations and figure some of that stuff out. These are the people I'm going to have a bonfire with and do some s'mores and have some fun. And, you know, I think how you view that is crucial.
Yeah.
To kind of bring this, you know, a little bit to a head here. You know, Joe, you've done some stuff in schools. Marcus does stuff in schools. When the crossover here is kind of what I'm looking at. So obviously he's coming in doing an assembly, addressing spiritual needs of kids indirectly without, you know, necessarily preaching, but sharing stories and pulling them in. He's hanging out in class, high-fiving. You're coming in to schools and you're doing science STEM stuff. You're coming in and, you know, pulling little entrepreneurs out and all of that. What kind of collaboration could there be from a spiritual side and a business side, if that makes sense, from an entrepreneur, science, STEM, and something like this?
Well, I think that when I teach, so that I do the business, do the STEM, and do ethics, right? And okay. Those three topics, when you get in front of kids, in a room, you probably have maybe a quarter of the kids like really connect at you. Like they're getting your thing. They understand it. 75% are there because it got to be, right? It's a peripheral thing. They'll listen to you and be polite, but you're not really going to reach them in that deal. So my obligation, like when I start teaching them, I say, is try to reach the unreachables, you know, try to convert a couple of those in there that like, you know, personal stories or where I've been throughs or, you know, trying to connect with that, you know, cause I'm talking money. It's really easy when it comes to kids about, hey, who wants to be rich in here? And everybody says yay to that. But as far as like the overlaps, you know, you can, if you can get a kid hungry in a topic, it really doesn't matter what you're talking about. I think if you go in there condescending and you keep it above their head and you don't connect with them, then doesn't matter what topic you're spewing.
Yeah. So your connection point, obviously you're coming in to do an assembly. Yeah. You have natural credibility coming through the door, but how are you? Cause I've seen a bunch of your posts and stuff. You're hanging out with kids in class. You're going to lunch. You're really, building relationships.
For sure.
How are you building that credibility other than, hey, I'm the guest speaker that's coming in for the assembly?
I make it mandatory. I will not go into a school and do an assembly if I can't hang out with their kids. It's a mandatory. I have to be able to hang out during lunch, because it's easy to stand on the stage and tell people a story. Everybody loves to hear a good story, but it's really when you're in the trenches with these young people, you talk about that 25%, like that's reality. But that's, I mean, let's say you go to a school of 100 or 1,000 kids, 250 of those kids are like locked in. They're like, bro, I really need what you have. And so that's when during the lunch presentations or the lunch times, where I'm literally hanging out with kids, like I'm beatboxing, rapping, like I'm making a fool of myself, because I want them to understand that, hey, I'm just like them. I'm just a little bit older and I'm a real tangible, touchable. Like you can touch me. Like I get a chance to speak at some big conferences this year where there's green room and I just don't like green room culture. Like, no, I'm not going to sit back. And I understand it. Like, listen, Sadie Robertson can't just walk out. You know, people will attack her, but I feel like I'm a, you know, 6'3" and 30-pound man. I can defend myself.
You got yourself.
Yeah, I think I'll be all right. But I purposely make sure that I'm with the people, because I believe that's what Christ would do. He would be with them and will walk with them and make himself approachable. And, you know, I talk to young people all the time and I try to remember their names. Like, hey, like, what's your name? Before they even start talking. And then I try to come, I have these weird tics I do in my head to remember their name. And so the next time when I go back to the school, hey, what's going on, Wesley? You remember me?
Yeah.
And I made it up
on.
In myself. Every single kid that reaches out to me on Instagram, I will message them back. Every single one. Now, sometimes it takes me weeks, but I made it up in myself, because kids want to feel connected to somebody.
Yep.
And that's how I establish credibility in a completely new way.
Yeah. And adults talk over their heads anyway.
Exactly. So like I will literally get on their level physically too. If I'm at a middle school, I might get down on the knee just to talk to them and say, hey, I see where you're at.
Yeah.
I've been there. I was you. But guess what? There's hope. And when you start opening up and being, I share my real struggles today. Like, just because I've overcome drugs doesn't mean I don't have struggles today.
Come on.
Like, I've got this weight loss journey that I'm on, and I'm like insecure and always wearing black because I want to look thin. And I'm transparent with that, because then kids are like, oh, I can be real. Man, I don't myself that much.
And the group of kids that in that 25%, they're usually not used to come people talking to them. Mm-hmm. Like, it's a whole separate set.
For sure. And growing up, like, I was a star athlete, but I was like a square. Like, I really was like socially awkward, and like, I was an introvert, and, you know, I was bullied a lot before I got good at football. So I really connect with a young person that's not the jock. I connect with the kids that, you know, have mental disabilities. Like, those are the kids you'll see me in lunch. I'm going to go and hang out with those kids. And if the popular kids want to come kick it, you're coming to kick it with us, period. Like, and then I challenge them, hey, be that person. So
why don't you give us one or two stories? I'd love to hear one or two from you too, Joe. Just breakthrough stories that you had in the school, like a kid that really just got it, or just a really special moment.
Man, there's so many.
I know. It's like asking for your favorite kid, you know? Like,
I know. Like, oh man, watch these kids listen to this. Like, hey man, you said all this. Man, they're... So I went to this inner city school in January of this year. Really hard school that they send their kids, all the kids that probably don't do the best education wise or have the best situations at home and just really don't get it, or maybe they're struggling with drug addiction, they all go to this school. And I'm in the school, and, like, you know, it's a low income school. They don't have a lot of resources to make this place nice. And I'm in the bottom of this carpeted room, and there's like 70 kids there. And so I'm like doing my thing. One thing I will do is I will 100% be myself. I don't care how big the stage is. Mm-hmm. Like, I spoke to 9 people last night, and you would have thought I was on the stage of a million. Like, I was going in. But I started preaching and I started speaking. And there was this one young man who I knew was high, like completely out of it. Like, I don't know what he was on, but he was on something. And I see him get impacted. And I see his heart start to open up to what I was saying. And then after the assembly, the principal set me up. She, like, oh, best assist ever. She had her office, and she had Maverick City playing on in her office. She's like, hey, why don't you just, you know, because he was their most at-risk kid. He said, why don't you just go and hang out with this young man? I said, okay, cool. Let's go and talk. And so he's just like, he's a mess. He's just crying. He's like, man, you don't understand what you just said. I'm like, oh, well, tell me more about it. He's like, I'm going through everything you said right now. I'm literally high right now. And I'm like, come on, this is my opportunity.
Yeah.
And so in that space, may not have been the public platform, but I got to tell him who he was in the Lord and that God wants to bring deliverance right now. I watched this kid, I promise you, I watched this kid get sober in a moment.
Yeah, come on.
I walked this kid through Romans 10, verse 9 and 10, and talked to him about what is salvation, like who Jesus is. I watched this kid give his life to Christ. He had a terrible situation at home, like mom trying to prostitute, just crazy stuff. And I watched this kid get set free and set on fire. And actually, I have to text the principal, see how he's doing, because I check on him all the time. But he is thriving, where he might be able to leave that school and go back to a regular high school. Wow. Because of his grades. And those are the stories that we want to hear. You know, just the kids that I want to go into the school and find the kids that are the most broken. Say, hey man, I may not be able to have the solution, but I'll be a listening ear. And, you know, so far so good. It's been pretty buck wild, man.
That's so cool.
For sure.
If people who are listening today, they want to connect and donate, they want to get behind what you're doing, where can they go to find you, find Reach One, all that?
Absolutely. So you can go to Reach One, R-E-A-C-H, the number one, INC.com, ReachOneInc.com. And on there we have testimonials and just some really cool resources that we've been able to connect with young people. One of the things I was challenged to do by one of my mentors is that create a platform where kids can really say what's happening in their lives. And so I have this video portal now where a kid can go on there and submit a video about the presentation, and you can start to see what God is doing in their lives through our presentation. So it's been
cool. Fun.
Cool.
Yeah. Awesome. Well, Marcus, we appreciate you being on with Joe and I. This was fun, and we'll have to have you on again. This is good.
Let's do it.
Thank you for listening to this show on Youngstown Studio. If you like our programming, we invite you to subscribe to our YouTube channel, follow our Facebook page, or subscribe to your favorite podcast platform like iTunes or Spotify. This is original Youngstown content, and we would